Would this year's men's USA basketball team be able to beat the 1992 Dream Team? I love, love, love these comparisons. It's one of my favorite things. And I know if you're a frequent listener to this show, you're going to say, Dave's going 92. He always likes the older players, thinks Jordan's the greatest, no one touched him, blah, blah, blah. Draymond Green this week, our good friend Draymond Green said, quote, quite frankly, I'm taking the 2024 team 7 days a week, five of 7 days a week, I believe he said, five out of seven games. Sorry. I'm taking the 2024 team 7 days a week. I think the 2024 team beats the Dream Team five out of seven games. Draymond Green. I'm going to be honest with you here. And I looked into this and I'm like, no way. Dream Team is better. But if you look at I actually agree with Draymond. I actually do. I actually think this year's men's basketball team could beat the 1992 Dream Team. Five out of seven, sure. I'll go with that too. And here's the simple reason why. In 1992, basketball at its highest level was only a U.S. sport. And all of the guys on Team USA were the best in the NBA. If you look at those rosters, you know, the teams that they might have had some trouble with, you know, Croatia, for example, had Drazen Petrovic, who was an NBA guy, Tony Kukoc, who was an NBA guy. But if you look at some of the rosters now, so basketball is so much more of a world sport now. And I really truly believe that the competition against Team USA in 2024 is significantly higher than it was in 1992. And now, not to say that I think all the players on this roster are better than those, because I don't, you know, the chemistry that team had was incredible. But I do think that if you're looking at who the caliber of opponents are, I do think that this 2024 team could be better than 92.
I disagree.
Fair enough. Let's go.
I'm going old school. And here's what I'll throw this one out to you. I agree totally, 100% with you, though. The competition level is much higher. These guys from around the world are now parts of the NBA, right? I mean, that didn't quite, you know, it definitely didn't to the likelihood of what we have right now. It wasn't even close. But I look at it, Dave, and you know, I'm everything you were just criticizing. I look at this and I go, Michael Jordan, I don't think there's a guy on the planet close to Michael Jordan. I really don't. And I watched basketball for a really long time, had Gopher season tickets, watched the real Michael Thompson back in the day, and all those great players we had at the Gophers, and many of them went into the NBA. But I look at Michael Jordan. I used to play cards with him. He's an unbelievable guy, unreal. Everything.
You played cards with Jordan?
Yeah, he was a Chicago guy forever. I mean, he was phenomenal.
How has that never come up? Sorry.
It's not. What are you going to say? You play cards. But you know, you get to know some of these guys. Scottie Pippen, you know, he had a boat not too far away from where my brother John and I had a boat. So these guys are wonderful guys. But I'll tell you, when you look, who's the greatest of all time? For me, Michael Jordan and Kobe Bryant would be a distant second. Nobody on this dream team is anywhere, in my opinion. You can bring up LeBron all you want. I just look at it as he travels on every single play that he ever has played. Every time he gets a foul, he acts as if he's 130 pounds instead of a 260 pound man. You know, so I just don't like the way they've changed in the NBA. But when you've got Magic Johnson, arguably the best and biggest guard I've ever seen. I remember watching him at Michigan State. I mean, he was unbelievable. Yeah. Larry Bird, are you kidding? Another guy who's 6 foot 9 inch guy who can kind of basically be a shooting guard, but he's a little bit of a forward because of his height. And then you have David Robinson and Patrick Ewing. These guys are all Hall of Famers. These guys aren't just ballers. These guys are beyond that level, I think. So, and I only mentioned a couple of them. I look at this team. Yeah, they're great. They're very, very good. I don't think they're anywhere in the ball game of that 1992 game or the team.
I mean, look at this roster. Charlie? I was about to pull up the roster here. How many Hall of Famers are on this roster? I see one, two. I see three. I see four. Four
we're
sure
counting,
things.
So
right? Four sure, sure Hall
things.
Of Famers. Mm-hmm. In my
Steph
opinion.
Curry.
Yep, you got
LeBron.
Steph and LeBron. Mm.
Kevin Durant?
Kevin Durant, for sure. I think Joel Embiid could retire today and be in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
Yep. I think it's those four. And then you've got guys with certainly the potential to do so, and guys like Anthony Edwards, Tyrese Halliburton, Jason Tatum. All those guys absolutely could. I mean, I don't know. I take five out of seven this team. I think the NBA, there's more talent in the NBA today than there ever has been. I think the global competition is better than it ever has been. It's like baseball where, you know, you had guys in the 70s who were throwing 85 miles an mile an hour fastballs saying, oh, you know, this is really hard. It's just harder today than it was in every sport. It's just harder. So
I agree with
that. If we're going mano a mano, those players at their peak versus these guys at their peak, these guys are better. They just are.
So, I'm going to be honest. It pains me to be on the side. I will say that it pains me to be on the side. And if there's an X factor here, it's that the 92 team, those guys are tougher. They are tougher. And I mean, they will beat up physically this team, other than maybe Anthony Edwards.
I mean, but you see what the
– and athletically.
But you see what the – I mean, I think LeBron James is the most – impressive athlete on the planet. However, you look at what the fouls they've been calling in these FIBA rules, you can barely touch a guy. I mean, so if it's these rules, that physicality flames out for the 92 team, which was a major, you know, major benefit of that
team.
Yeah,
they were tough.
Absolutely.
Guys, Larry Bird, I mean, honestly, Patrick Ewing, unbelievable player. David Robinson, beyond anybody else. Michael Jordan, there's nobody close. Scottie Pippen, he's his own teammate, and he's probably one of the closer players of that time. I think these guys in today's NBA, you guys would be shocked at how good they would be in today's NBA or today's gold medal team and all the rest of that type of stuff. I mean, they can do Magic Johnson. Magic Johnson did it at every single level, and his 6'9 guy, he could pass it to anybody. He was not selfish. He was one of the greatest entertainers and basketball players I've ever seen. You guys are right. When you look at the rest of the country and the rest of the world, yes, there's much higher competition. But we're talking about which team is better. Mm-hmm. This team, I think, okay, the point differential they had during their games at the Olympics, the closest one was 38 points.
You're talking about in 92?
Yeah, 92. I think
they weren't playing anybody.
But I think they
were playing a bunch against guys that might have made the G League here.
I agree with that. I do agree with that. But I would say this. I think they were that good that they would have beat this team by 38 points, at least, maybe more. They beat Cuba by 79.
This team by 38 points?
Oh, at least that much, maybe more.
The 92 Dream Team would beat the 2024 United States of America Olympic team by 38 points.
40. Maybe 50. Pete. Yes.
Pete, come on.
Absolutely. If you're gonna, these are the greatest players that ever stepped on basketball.
You got some nostalgia-covered glasses going on, Pete.
I hate myself for this take. This hurts me so much because I want to agree with you, Pete. But this the 2024 team, I mean, they weren't even – listen, they beat – what did they win by, 20 or 30 yesterday over Puerto Rico, I think it was. And they weren't even – I mean, they were sloppy yesterday. They're trying these threes that were way off. It was such a sloppy game, and they still won by 20. I just – because of the – I'll tell you this. If I had a time machine, I would love to see that game between 92 and 2024. But I – again – I hate myself for this. I do think that the 2024 team wins 5 out of 7.
These guys would run them off the court on all 7. I mean, I'm not kidding you. They would run them off the court. They're more talented. They understand the aggressive side of things. They are athletic. I mean, I look at every one of these guys.
The training is different, though. The players now are stronger. They're bigger. They're faster.
Do you guys remember David Robinson and Patrick Ewing?
I mean,
at 7 feet, they were
tough.
Menacing, and they were strong.
There's a man named Joel
Embiid, would not
who's
be able
tall,
to
7
run
feet
the
tall
floor.
And menacing, and Joel Embiid matches up perfectly.
Oh, I think he does, too. I think that would be one
they
guy
they can't
who
shoot like Durant
out.
Can.
None of them are 6'11" and can shoot like Durant can.
Well, Magic Johnson might have something to say about that.
Durant's a better bird.
I'll tell you what. I'll give you. I'll take Magic. I'll take Mullen over him. I'll take them all.
Oh, you're nuts.
I'm looking at no.
You're nuts.
You guys didn't. You weren't there watching these guys in person.
I was. I was old enough. Charlie was. He wasn't alive yet.
You weren't old enough yet, man.
I was 13.
That's too young. That doesn't count, man.
I love this discussion.
Yeah,
it's fun.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Finish up. I don't want to cut you.
I was just going to say this. For anybody who never got a chance to see Michael Jordan play in person, has no idea how much better he is than anybody on the court today. Nobody. And I know that you could go back in time and say, well, but before that it was so-and-so. Michael Jordan is special. Michael Jordan.
I agree.
How about the Hall of Fame yesterday? One of the players decides to say, you know what? The reason I went to North Carolina is that guy right there, Michael Jordan, who's here today. Michael Jordan is an icon. He's something different than everybody else. He's not even in the same ballgame.
Jordan is the only guy, I think, on that roster. Of the Barkley, Ewing, Pippen, Mullen, Clyde, David Arthur.
Karl Malone.
Jordan's the only guy on that roster that I agree with. I would take him over anybody else on today's roster.
Mind you, that entire team is also fouling out in the first 10 minutes of the game.
I don't disagree with that.
That's
Barkley
probably true.
And Ewing are both gone after the first quarter. And then, Karl Malone's out after that.
They would have had the swag to look at that referee and go, really? You do that again?
Karl Malone would have threatened him to meet him outside after.
He would have.
And then you'd get Christian Laettner in there instead, and he would have gotten Laettner would have gotten crushed by this team.
He shouldn't have been there.
The StylesFinancial.com talk and text line, loving for Pete. Pete is correct. Someone says Pete is correct. So thank you for texting the line, Pete. I appreciate it.
I went in like six times. I finally got through.
Oh, I love it. I love it. All right, we'll take a quick break and come back. The Twins, I guess you can call it a move. They made a little bit of a move at the deadline. We'll talk about it and whether it's worth anything or not. Coming up next, you'll listen to...
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Puddle. The Twins make a big swing at the trade deadline. No, they don't. It's barely a blip. It sounds like in the locker room that... they were, quote, disheartened, Dan Hayes writes in The Athletic. Carlos Correa came out before and said, we got to make a move, got to do pitching. And then after, he is a very smart person, said, you know what? Guys that we need to win are in this clubhouse. We got to look inside. Which is always, that's always the Twins kind of MO. if they tried to make a big swing for somebody that didn't work, that's fine. We all had our thoughts on this. I didn't necessarily think they needed to do much, but I did feel pretty strongly, as you did, Charlie, that pitching, specifically middle relief pitching, needed to be addressed. Mm-hmm. It kind of was.
Yeah.
Thoughts?
I mean, it was kind of addressed. They picked up Trevor Richards. Worth noting, Randy Dobnik back with the major league team for the first time in a long time. Long journey for Dobnik to get back there. That's been a fun story for him. But yeah, they traded for Trevor Richards, a relief pitcher from the Blue Jays. They gave up not much. They gave up a middling prospect who, I mean, you never know what happens. You look at Luis Gill out in New York now, who's their ace all of a sudden, and we gave him up for absolutely nothing, chump change. But Trevor Richards, Obviously, they're seeing some things that the numbers don't necessarily say. 4.5 ERA, 1.32 whip on the season, and that's kind of what his career has been. He's at a 4.5 ERA last year, 4.95, 5.3, all over the place with those high ERAs. However, his expected batting average and expected ERA are in the top 75, these 75th percentile. So those underlying stats, which we know the Twins front office loves, say that he should probably be performing better than he is, so maybe they got him at a cheap deal. You look at what else happened during the trade deadline, though, right? You look at the prices on some of these other guys. That's what makes me just fine with what the Twins did.
Yeah.
I mean, the Orioles got Trevor Rogers from the Marlins for Connor Norby and Kyle Stowers. Those are top prospects that the Orioles gave up. Two of them who will be starting for the Marlins sooner rather than later. Baltimore's got a super deep system, so their number five guy would be like number one in a lot of other systems. Rogers has a 4.5 ERA as a starter this year. I mean, it was an expensive deadline. I'm fine with Twins not overpaying.
I just wonder, you know, I kind of felt, as you guys know, we talked about this. I think both of you guys were less interested in doing something major. I still just looked at it and thought, you know, the bats are doing so well for us. Why are we not going to try to do something about the pitching? And I don't think the Trevor Richards was an impressive thing to do as far as our run for this year. But, you know, it is interesting, like you guys said, it's kind of twin speak. But did you guys see the quote from Byron Buxton? He says, "It shows that they trust us and we trust ourselves." I think he was trying to stay positive, guys, because I think if you're a player on the Twins right now, you're probably pretty ticked because you're kind of carrying your side of it, and they need something better at on the pitching side. Now, we continue to do the same thing we've done all year, which is, all right, we lose to the teams basically with winning records, and we beat the teams that have losing records. And, you know, you just look at the last three series that we've got. We go up against Detroit. We win 2 of 3. That's not bad, but they're an under 500 team. We lose to the Mets 2 out of 3. Well, that worked out. Then the Sox, of course, we've beat them now twice, and now we're likely to beat them again. Charlie pointed out just how bad they were. Ooh, do you know that they've given up 586 runs this year? I mean,
they're going for all-time records. They really are.
They're staring down 20 straight, right? 20 straight losses?
Yeah, 20 straight losses. If the Twins win today, it'll be 20 straight losses for them. I mean, they're going for all-time bad records.
And the only team worse than them right now on that particular stat is Colorado. So it gives you a bit of an idea of just where they stand right now. I think the turnout of the Mets that we've seen and what some of the movement that we're seeing, that Baltimore trade that you were talking about, Charlie, I mean, that's an interesting one. That is a lot of money, but these guys, you think about this for a second. They're one of the lower payrolls in all of Major League Baseball, and they're sitting still on top of the Yankees. Now, it's basically a dead heat, I guess, mm-hmm. but nonetheless, I mean, look at where they are for somebody who's not spending the kind of money the Yankees are spending and the Mets are spending and the Dodgers are spending mm-hmm. and all the rest of them. And it shows you that there are certain things you can do that you can get it done. And you know, over the last few years, Tampa's been another one of those teams that's been able to do something like that. Why? I'm not saying that we had to make a trade, but it just, I think that probably made the locker room a little bit sour.
Sure. And to be clear, when I talk about cost of trades, I'm not talking about monetary costs. I'm talking about prospect capital.
Yeah.
You know, the Brewers got Frankie Montas, who's not been great for Joey Weimer and Jacob Junis. I mean, again, top prospects for a very middling relief pitcher or starting pitcher, that is. It was very, very expensive prospect-wise this deadline for any kind of pitching. Absolutely any kind of pitching ended up being incredibly expensive.
Here's a bigger question for you. Why is anyone in that locker room or in this fan base surprised by this?
Shouldn't this be.
Is always the way the Twins do things. They it is so rare that they take a big swing on a free agent in general, although it's been done a little bit more in the offseason. But at the halfway, I can't remember a time on a massive swing for a guy. Charlie, who am I not thinking of?
Massive mid-season trade.
Yeah. Massive mid-season trades?
Nothing's popping to mind for big in-season trades.
However, it never happens.
I mean, again, you do have to give credit where it's due in that in the offseason they have been making more and more of that. I mean, going back
they've
to signing
some.
Josh
yeah,
Donaldson.
Absolutely.
It's pretty much since that they've been making some bigger deals. But you're right. Mid-season, that they're just not known for a
it's
very,
not it.
Very
they,
big
they
swing.
Never do it.
Unless it's selling. They will sell big midseason when the time comes.
But you're looking at – you're 5.5 games out of Cleveland who – it's just got to be – you just got to get the job done. Even one relief pitcher isn't going to fix that or whatever. It's not going to be a one guy. You just got to get the job done. And do it against teams that are above 500 would be a great place to start, as you to your point, Pete. So 110 first pitch today, Twins trying to hand the Chicago White Sox their 20th consecutive loss. That is really awful. We'll take a break. Come back. David Plummer, 2016 U.S. Olympic swimmer, is going to join us around the corner. You're listening to The Huddle on 830 WCCO. The Olympics are in full swing in Paris. We're taking the turn to week two. Reagan Smith, swimmer from Lakeville, has won a couple of medals so far. Speaking of a couple of medals, our next guest has won a few Olympic gold medals in 2016. He won a gold medal as a member of the 4x100-meter relay, won a bronze medal in the 100-meter backstroke. David Plummer joins us on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline. David, good morning. Thank you for joining us. I appreciate the time, man. How are you?
I'm doing well. Happy to be here.
Glad to have you with us. And just for everybody who doesn't know this at home, David and I got to know each other in 2016 when I covered you at the Games in Rio. And I remember us having a conversation about just that those 4 years between cycles where you have to keep your mind focused, and then in order to get yourself ready for that 1 week period or 2 week period, people don't understand what that struggle's like. That every day where you have some competitions, but the big competition is always farther away, but you still have to commit yourself to that. What is it like? What goes in to that 4 year cycle of training, getting yourself ready for what you hope will be an Olympic bid?
Yeah, it's quite the process, and definitely kind of a more of a mental game, I think, than anything. Just to kind of stay on the grind and make sure you're doing everything you need to do to prepare. And I think the toughest thing is there's just no guarantees, right? You know, we've seen over the past week here at the Olympics, like, people who are really set up to succeed and everything's going their way, you know, struggles happen and mistakes happen, and It definitely seems like all of that work that goes into those 4 years is just to give you the best chance. It doesn't really guarantee anything. So definitely a grind for sure.
David, quick question for you. I know you're a swimming family. You've got brothers who are swimmers. You are obviously at an absolutely elite level of where you were with the Olympics and all. I'm curious, though. You're born in Norman, Oklahoma, right? So how did you avoid being a football player? And I only ask that because you're a big guy, 6'3", 210-pound guy, and you're in Norman, Oklahoma. How did you get past those? I'm sure guys were coming to your house looking at your mom and dad saying, hey, wouldn't your son like to play football?
Well, I think it helped that I was only about 160 pounds in high school. So that helped. But honestly, I don't think my mom would have allowed it by the time I kind of came around. My oldest brother played football for a little bit, and I think found out very early on the risks associated with it. So, yeah, we ended up in the pool a lot more often than not.
David Plummer, who was at the 2016 Summer Olympic Games, joining us in the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline. David, those 2 weeks, what is that like from an athlete standpoint? In the sense of, I imagine you still have to try to make things normal. It's still a pool. The lanes are the same. Everything's the same size for the most part. But this is anything but normal, especially for you in your journey where you had tried a few times before you got to the Olympics. How do you make those 2 weeks be the best that you truly can be?
Yeah, I that's something that I think about a lot, especially watching the games now. You know, I'm obviously very, very proud and humbled to have had the career that I did. And that said, I didn't swim my best race at the finals of the Olympic Games. And I think that's always something that you look back on and say, what could I have done different? And I think the difficult thing is, I mean, just like you said, you're trying to normalize as much as you can, but it's obviously a very different world and something that, you know, a lot of swimmers or track and field or other athletes that maybe don't have that spotlight for the majority of the time they're competing. All of a sudden that spotlight shines very, very bright. And it's sort of a whirlwind, right? Where you got to kind of take deep breaths and stay focused on what you're trying to do to compete at your best, but also sort of take in the sights along the way. And I think it's a hard balance, especially your first time around. It's hard to keep all of that stuff right, but I do think, just like you said, you're trying to do as much as you can to focus on everything that you've done to get there, everything that you've sort of achieved along the way, and remember that it's, like you said, it's a 50-meter pool. The flags are in the same place and should be as easy as you can possibly make it to make it normal.
David, from a social standpoint, athletic standpoint, I understand all of the various distractions, and you're in Rio and all the rest of it on the competition. How, I know that you were talking about the discipline to do what you do. Was it an unbelievably relaxing feeling once you were done and you could just sort of enjoy the Olympics rather than being looking forward to what you're having to do?
No, he had to talk to people like me.
I think there's definitely some relief that comes along with it. You know, the crazy thing for me was I think I was in Rio maybe a day or two longer than when I was competing, and I came home a little early just because our second son, I think at that point, was 8 weeks old. So I felt like I'd missed most of his life to that point. So just kind of, like I said, adds to the whirlwind. But there's definitely a relief, and it feels like almost a letdown, right, of go from kind of the spotlight to you know, back to normal, right? Back to dad and all of the things that come with it. So I think that's why so many athletes talk about that kind of letdown after the games, is that light shines real bright for a couple of weeks and then all of a sudden it turns off. And if you want to do it again, that's 4 years away.
When you look at someone, David, like a Michael Phelps, or in these games, certainly Katie Ledecky, who has been dominating for so long. I mean, it's one thing to do it once, but to do it as many times and be as good as she has. Are you impressed by that? How does someone who is so good at that sport stay that good for that long? I'm floored at the amount of success that Ledecky has had coming into this.
Yeah, same here. I've always been amazed by Katie, right? I still joke that even though I have 10 years on her, I want to be like Katie Ledecky when I grow up. she's just an amazing athlete. Obviously, her talent is kind of generational, but I think the things that make Katie are her discipline, her consistency, her professionalism. She just handles herself and kind of always has, as a very mature, professional individual. And has never taken any shortcuts, right? She knew what it took to be dominant in the mile, right? I mean, it's talk about a grind. There's nothing more of a grind than the distance races. So yeah, just amazing that she's been able to kind of maintain the way she has over the years.
David, how do the athletes, as a guy standing on the outside, never ever experiencing an Olympics even in person, but especially as an athlete, what is that like as far as, is there much of a mix? Are you, I mean, honestly, I have no idea. Are you guys able to get to know some of the guys on the track team or the basketball team or whatever, and get to know them a little bit? That's question one. Question two is, what did you think of Snoop Dogg?
Yeah. Well, to answer your second question first, I mean, what a great ambassador.
He really was. He's long.
Right? I keep seeing how much positivity people are really taking from the games, and I think people have been thirsty for it, just given kind of everything that's happened over the past 4 years. So I think it's actually been really wonderful to see somebody just, you know, that everybody likes, that everybody kind of enjoys, just bringing a lot of joy to the games, and highlighting the things that are going on. But yeah, and now I'm so excited about Snoop Dogg, I've forgotten the first part of your question.
just the mix with other athletes from different sports. Is there much of that?
Yeah. There actually is, I think, quite a bit. I think we were lucky in Rio, lucky in one way that all of Team USA was kind of in one building. So we got to kind of mix as much as we could. Obviously, the being able to eat in the same place, I think, is another cool thing, just to kind of just see some other people and ask them about their competition and how things are going and talk through some of the things that you're seeing on TV. And you know, that was really cool for us as Team USA. But I think, you know, harder for us to kind of get to know some of the other countries outside of our sport. So I think a little yes and a little no for sure. Mm-hmm.
David, my last one for you is there was an article this week, or it's been kind of around here, that the depth of the pool and the lanes that you're in make a big difference. I understand the lane part of it. Obviously, as you get closer to the middle, there's less chop, the water's smoother. At least that's what it seems like to me. But does the depth of the pool make a difference in times? They're saying that it's possible that the times are slower because the pool is too shallow. Is there any truth to this? And in your experience, have you ever thought anything like this?
Yeah, I mean, I think there is some truth to it. From my perspective, it's like, you know, you think about it in college, right? We at the University of Minnesota, we swim in the fastest pool, and I would argue in the world. Some of the fastest yard times ever happen in that pool. And it's deep, you know, kind of from one end to the other, right? And I think there's something to that. And I've had to compete in shallower pools, and it you feel it, right? Especially when you're diving in and at kind of the deepest point of your entry. I think you can feel how close it is. So I definitely think that there's some truth to it. But that said, you know, all of the athletes there have kind of said it in their interviews, right? It's not in your control. Everybody's in the same pool, so you do everything you can to have the best race you can.
David Plummer, 2016 Olympic swimmer. It's so nice to catch up with you. It's been a few years since we've had a chance to chat. I appreciate you coming on and giving us some perspective this morning. Thanks, David.
Yeah, thank you, David. Absolutely. Those kids are lucky at Wayzata and Minnesota to have you, man. That's awesome.
Yeah, appreciate it. Thanks, guys.
David Plummer, thank you very much. We will take a quick break, come back, and we'll put a wrap on the show. You're listening to The Huddle on E3O WCCO. Fun show today. If you missed any of it, make sure you check out The Huddle podcast, wherever you get your podcast, or on the free Odyssey app. We just had David Plummer on last segment, Olympic swimmer in 2016. Just a great guy. Pete, you and I were talking off air. I think he was 30 or very close to 30 when he finally qualified for the games. He had missed it the time before by just a little bit. And I was always fascinated about how you can stay. And he talked about this a little bit, how you can stay so focused, getting so close, but mm-hmm. still staying so focused to something that, you know, as he said, is never a guarantee.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
The Olympics are in full swing in Paris. We're taking the turn to week two. Reagan Smith, swimmer from Lakeville, has won a couple of medals so far. Speaking of a couple of medals, our next guest has won a few Olympic gold medals in 2016. He won a gold medal as a member of the 4x100 meter relay, won a bronze medal in the 100-meter backstroke. David Plummer joins us on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline. David, good morning. Thank you for joining us. I appreciate the time, man. How are you?
I'm doing well. Happy to be here.
Glad to have you with us. And I just for everybody who doesn't know this at home, David and I got to know each other in 2016 when I covered you at the Games in Rio. And I remember us having a conversation about just that those 4 years between cycles where you have to keep your mind focused, and then in order to get yourself ready for that 1 week period or 2 week period, people don't understand what that struggle's like. That every day where you have some competitions, but the big competition is always farther away, but you still have to commit yourself to that. What is it like? What goes in to that 4 year cycle of training, getting yourself ready for what you hope will be an Olympic bid?
Yeah, it's quite the process, and definitely kind of a more of a mental game, I think, than anything. Just to kind of stay on the grind and make sure you're doing everything you need to do to prepare. And I think the toughest thing is there's just no guarantees, right? You know, we've seen over the past week here at the Olympics, like, people who are really set up to succeed and everything's going their way, you know, struggles happen and mistakes happen, and it definitely seems like all of that work that goes into those 4 years is just to give you the best chance. It doesn't really guarantee anything. So definitely a grind for sure.
David, quick question for you. I know you're a swimming family. You've got brothers who are swimmers. You're obviously at an absolutely elite level of where you were with the Olympics and all. I'm curious, though. You're born in Norman, Oklahoma, right? So how did you avoid being a football player? And I only ask that because you're a big guy, 6'3", 210-pound guy, and you're in Norman, Oklahoma. How did you get past those? I'm sure guys were coming to your house looking at your mom and dad saying, hey, wouldn't your son like to play football?
Well, I think it helped that I was only about 160 pounds in high school. So that helped. But honestly, I don't think my mom would have allowed it by the time I kind of came around. My oldest brother played football for a little bit, and I think found out very early on the risks associated with it. So, yeah, we ended up in the pool a lot more often than not.
David Plummer, who was at the 2016 Summer Olympic Games, joining us in the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline. David, those 2 weeks, what is that like from an athlete standpoint? In the sense of, I imagine you still have to try to make things normal. It's still a pool. The lanes are the same. Everything's the same size for the most part. But this is anything but normal, especially for you in your journey where you had tried a few times before you got to the Olympics. How do you make those 2 weeks be the best that you truly can be?
Yeah, that's something that I think about a lot, especially watching the games now. You know, I'm obviously very, very proud and humbled to have had the career that I did. And that said, I didn't swim my best race at the finals of the Olympic Games. And I think that's always something that you look back on and say, what could I have done different? And I think the difficult thing is, I mean, just like you said, you're trying to normalize as much as you can, but it's obviously a very different world and something that, you know, a lot of swimmers or track and field or other athletes that maybe don't have that spotlight for the majority of the time they're competing, all of a sudden that spotlight shines very, very bright. And it's sort of a whirlwind, right, where you got to kind of take deep breaths and stay focused on what you're trying to do to compete at your best, but also sort of take in the sights along the way. And I think it's a hard balance, especially your first time around. It's hard to keep all of that stuff right, but I do think, just like you said, you're trying to do as much as you can to focus on everything that you've done to get there, everything that you've sort of achieved along the way, and remember that it's, like you said, it's a 50-meter pool. The flags are in the same place and should be as easy as you can possibly make it to make it normal.
David, from a social standpoint, athletic standpoint, I understand all of the various distractions and you're in Rio and all the rest of it on the competition. How, I know that you were talking about the discipline to do what you do. Was it an unbelievably relaxing feeling once you were done and you could just sort of enjoy the Olympics rather than being looking forward to what you're having to do?
No, he had to talk to people like me.
I think there's definitely some relief that comes along with it. You know, the crazy thing for me was I think I was in Rio maybe a day or two longer than when I was competing, and I came home a little early just because our second son, I think at that point, was 8 weeks old. So I felt like I'd missed most of his life to that point. So just kind of, like I said, adds to the whirlwind. But there's definitely a relief, and then it feels like almost a letdown, right, of go from kind of the spotlight to you know, back to normal, right, back to dad and all of the things that come with it. So I think that's why so many athletes talk about that kind of letdown after the games, is that light shines real bright for a couple of weeks, and then all of a sudden it turns off. And if you want to do it again, it's 4 years away.
When you look at someone, David, like Michael Phelps, or in these games, certainly Katie Ledecky, who has been dominating for so long. I mean, it's one thing to do it once, but to do it as many times and be as good as she has. Are you impressed by that? How does someone who is so good at that sport stay that good for that long? I'm floored at the amount of success that Ledecky has had coming into this.
Yeah, same here. I've always been amazed by Katie, right? I still joke that even though I have 10 years on her, I want to be like Katie Ledecky when I grow up. she's just an amazing athlete. Obviously, her talent is kind of generational, but I think the things that make Katie are her discipline, her consistency, her professionalism. She just handles herself and kind of always has, as a very mature professional individual, and has never taken any shortcuts, right? She knew what it took to be dominant in the mile, right? I mean, it's talk about a grind. There's nothing more of a grind than the distance races. So yeah, just amazing that she's been able to kind of maintain the way she has over the years.
David, how do the athletes, as a guy standing on the outside, never ever experiencing an Olympics even in person, but especially as an athlete, what is that like as far as, is there much of a mix? Are you, I mean, honestly, I have no idea. Are you guys able to get to know some of the guys on the track team or the basketball team or whatever, and get to know them a little bit? That's question one. Question two is, what did you think of Snoop Dogg?
Yeah. Well, to answer your second question first, I mean, what a great ambassador.
He really was. He's seeing,
right? I keep seeing how much positivity people are really taking from the games, and I think people have been thirsty for it, just given kind of everything that's happened over the past 4 years. So I think it's actually been really wonderful to see somebody just, you know, that everybody likes, that everybody kind of enjoys, just bringing a lot of joy to the games, and highlighting the things that are going on. But yeah, and now I'm so excited about Snoop Dogg, I've forgotten the first part of your question.
just the mix with other athletes from different sports. Is there much of that?
Yeah. There actually is, I think, quite a bit. I think we were lucky in Rio, you know, lucky in one way that all of Team USA was kind of in one building. So we got to kind of mix as much as we could. Obviously, the being able to eat in the same place, I think, is another cool thing, just to kind of just see some other people and ask them about their competition and how things are going and talk through some of the things that you're seeing on TV. And you know, that was really cool for us in, as Team USA, but I think, you know, harder for us to kind of get to know some of the other countries outside of our sport. So I think a little yes and a little no for sure. Mm-hmm.
David, my last one for you is, there was an article this week, or it's been kind of around here, that the depth of the pool and the lanes that you're in make a big difference. I understand the lane part of it. Obviously, as you get closer to the middle, there's less chop, the water's smoother. At least that's what it seems like to me. But does the depth of the pool make a difference in times? They're saying that it's possible that the times are slower because the pool is too shallow. Is there any truth to this? And in your experience, have you ever thought anything like this?
Yeah, I mean, I think there is some truth to it. you know, from my perspective, it's like, you know, you think about it in college, right? We, at the University of Minnesota, we swim in the fastest pool, and I would argue in the world, had some of the fastest yard times ever happen in that pool. And it's deep, you know, kind of from one end to the other, right? And I think there's something to that. And I've had to compete in shallower pools, and it you feel it, right? Especially when you're diving in and at kind of the deepest point of your entry. I think you can feel how close it is. So I definitely think that there's some truth to it. But that said, you know, all of the athletes there have kind of said it in their interviews, right? It's not in your control. Everybody's in the same pool. So you do everything you can to have the best race you can.
David Plummer, 2016 Olympic swimmer. It's so nice to catch up with you. It's been a few years since we've had a chance to chat. I appreciate you coming on and giving us some perspective this morning. Thanks, David.
Yeah, thank you, David. Absolutely. Those kids are lucky at Wayzata and Minnesota to have you, man. That's awesome.
Yeah, appreciate it. Thanks, guys.
David Plummer, thank you very much. We will take a quick break, come back, and we'll put a wrap on the show. You're listening to The Huddle on 830 WCCO. Fun show today. If you missed any of it, make sure you check out The Huddle podcast, wherever you get your podcast, or on the free Odyssey app. We just had David Plummer on last segment, Olympic swimmer in 2016. Just a great guy. Pete, you and I were talking off air. I think he was 30 or very close to 30 when he finally qualified for the games. He had missed it the time before by just a little bit. And I was always fascinated about how you can stay. And he talked about this a little bit, how you can stay so focused, getting so close, but still staying so focused to something that, you know, as he said, is never a guarantee. You know, you're never guaranteed that Olympic spot, which always, one of the things I loved about covering the Olympics. The StylesFinancial.com talking text line, weighing in on our dream team versus the 2024 debate, which team would win. This is my favorite. There is enough film on all of these professionals. Couldn't artificial intelligence make it possible for these two teams to play each other? How about Babe Ruth against modern-day pitchers? I love this suggestion. Finally, a good use for AI. If anyone out there
Babe Ruth would strike knows out on AI, pitches. Let's be honest.
What's that? Babe Ruth
would strike out on three pitches. I'm sorry. He's not hitting a 104-mile-an-hour fastball. Babe Ruth is one of the greatest of all times. He is not hitting a 104-mile-an-hour fastball. He can go up there for
have you ever seen his, like, his swing is awful.
Yeah,
his swing's terrible. Athletic. He takes like a giant forward step forward. I mean, if a hitting coach looked at him today, and they'd be like, yeah, start him in high A ball. We'll see if he gets here.
Well, you know, the tough thing for him was he had a grill in that little spot in the, on the side. He was putting bratwurst on there and stuff before he went out there.
But if we could do an AI simulation on the 92 team versus the 2024 team, if they win gold, I think this is an excellent use of AI.
It could be cool.
I would watch it.
I'd be in favor of that. I think that'd be cool.
All right. Any of the television stations nationally who want to steal this idea, go ahead. I just want to be able to see it. That's all. I just want to be able to see it.
That would be awesome.
The other little news and notes that we have not touched on this week, Brock Faber, Minnesota's own Brock Faber, got a new contract this week that locks him up until it doesn't start till the 25-26 season, so it's not this year. He'll be about 31 by the time it's all over, making $8.5 million a year for Faber. My initial thought, and I think a lot of, you know, my initial thought to this was that this looks like it's a lot of money now, although it doesn't start until after this season is up, which is when the buyouts of Parisian suitors contracts are up. In 3 or 4 years when he's hitting his prime, and as good as he is, he still has more to go. This deal is going to look like an absolute bargain for what this kid can provide. And I know that he's only played one full season, and there's a lot of, you know, well, is he going to keep doing it? The thing that I saw out of Brock Faber, and this goes with any sport when you have that guy, is that the game doesn't look too big for him. And that was very evident to me early on. And so that's why I think you make this deal, and it's a steal. I mean, in a couple years – it's a steal for him, I think, at the level that he's playing.
tell you what, the people of Maple Grove are hoping like heck he comes out there to buy a big, nice house. That's for sure. With he some might. Of that money. But, you know, yeah. To your point, though, Dave, it's only going to go up, I would think, at least, for all these different contracts, for all the, you know, Major League Baseball, NFL, yeah. everybody. It just seems to go up every single year, and it's been pretty traditionally that way. It's amazing, though, that in a fairly small sample set, they have decided to make the decision. He's now in the top, what, 15 or less category of defensemen as far as what he's getting paid. Yep. And then you got Spurgeon making $7.5 million as well.
Yeah,
so
Spurgeon, yep.
There's some real money being spent out there. So that this to point at the Wild and say they're not trying would be wrong. There's no way. Now, what the Twins did just now during the trade deadline, that might be a little bit different, and I think the fans should know that going in. Yeah. But nonetheless, it's interesting.
It's an interesting comparison. I mean, the cap's going up in hockey. We all know that. So, I mean, they're playing that into it's a long-term deal. Cap's going to be going up. New TV deals. All of these things are going to be happening for the NHL that are going to make those deals look even better as well as obviously him playing well. By the way, Dave, I have a quick answer. I did ask ChatGPT predict a seven-game series between the 92 Dream Team and the 2024 U.S. Olympics team. ChatGPT says, by a 4-3 margin, the Dream Team wins.
Wow, no way!
That's what AI says.
You know what?
It's not
this
that
should
close,
be a recurring
guys.
Segment. This should be a recurring. What can we ask AI to predict today? I think we should do this more often.
I'm going to say
Does
one thing
have
real
a box
quick.
Score?
I'm going to say this real quick about AI. Don't trust it. I'm telling you right now, don't
You're right.
trust it.
You're right. Oh, I'd love it. Oh, man. I want to see a simulation. Although every AI weird simulation I've seen, it's a little freaky. Like the eyes are in the wrong place, and it's bizarre. Well, we're ending in a very different spot we started today, gentlemen. Oh, man. Good times. Thanks to our guests today. Thanks to you both as well, and thanks to everybody for listening. Don't forget to check out the podcast if you missed anything today. We'll be back next Sunday. Have a great week, everyone. The Huddle on E30 WCCO. Fun show today. If you missed any of it, make sure you check out the Huddle podcast wherever you get your podcast or on the free Odyssey app. We just had David Plummer on last segment, Olympic swimmer in 2016. Just a great guy. Pete, you and I were talking off air. I think he was 30 or very close to 30 when he finally qualified for the games. He had missed it the time before by just a little bit. And I was always fascinated about how you can stay, and he talked about this a little bit, how you can stay so focused, getting so close, but still staying so focused to something that, you know, as he said, is never a guarantee. You know, you're never guaranteed that Olympic spot, which always, one of the things I loved about covering the Olympics. The StylesFinancial.com talk and text line weighing in on our Dream Team versus the 2024 debate, which team would win. This is my favorite. There is enough film on all of these professionals. Couldn't artificial intelligence make it possible for these two teams to play each other? How about Babe Ruth against modern-day pitchers? I love this suggestion. Finally a good use for AI. If anyone out there
Babe Ruth would strike out on
AI,
three pitches. Let's be honest.
What's that? Babe Ruth
would strike out on three pitches. I'm sorry. He's not hitting a 104-mile-an-hour fastball. Babe Ruth is one of the greatest of all times. He is not hitting a 104-mile-an-hour fastball. He can go up there
and have you ever seen his, like, his swing is awful.
Yeah,
his swing's terrible. He takes like a giant forward step forward. I mean, if a hitting coach looked at him today, and they'd be like, yeah, start him in high A ball. We'll see if he gets here.
Well, you know, the tough thing for him was he had a grill in that little spot on the side. He was there, right? Putting bratwurst on there and stuff before he went out there.
But if we could do an AI simulation on the 92 team versus the 2024 team, if they win gold, I think this is an excellent use of AI.
It could be cool.
I would watch it.
I'd be in favor of that. I think that'd be cool.
All right. Any of the television stations nationally who want to steal this idea, go ahead. I just want to be able to see it. That's all. I just want to be able to see it.
That would be awesome.
The other little news and notes that we have not touched on this week, Brock Faber, Minnesota's own Brock Faber, got a new contract this week that locks him up until It doesn't start till the 25-26 season, so it's not this year. He'll be about 31 by the time it's all over, making $8.5 million a year for Faber. My initial thought, and I think a lot of my initial thought to this was that this looks like it's a lot of money now, although it doesn't start until after this season is up, which is when the buyouts of Parisian suitors contracts are up. In 3 or 4 years, when he's hitting his prime, and as good as he is, he still has more to go. This deal is going to look like an absolute bargain for what this kid can provide. And I know that he's only played one full season, and there's a lot of, is he going to keep doing it? The thing that I saw out of Brock Faber, and this goes with any sport when you have that guy, is that the game doesn't look too big for him. And that was very evident to me early on. And so that's why I think you make this deal, and it's a steal. I mean, in a couple years, it's a steal for him, I think, at the level that he's playing.
Tell you what, the people of Maple Grove are hoping like heck he comes out there to buy a big, nice house. That's for sure. With some of that money. But, to your point, though, Dave, it's only going to go up, I would think, at least, for all these different contracts, for all the, Major League Baseball, NFL, everybody. It just seems to go up every single year, and it's been pretty traditionally that way. It's amazing, though, that in a fairly small sample set, they have decided to make the decision. He's now in the top, 15 or less category of defensemen as far as what he's getting paid. Yep. And then you got Spurgeon making $7.5 million as well.
Yeah,
so
Spurgeon, yep.
There's some real money being spent out there. So that this to point at the Wild and say they're not trying would be wrong. There's no way. Now, what the Twins did just now during the trade deadline, that might be a little bit different, and I think the fans should know that going in. Yeah, but nonetheless, it's interesting.
It's an interesting comparison. I mean, the cap's going up in hockey. We all know that. So, they're playing that into it's a long-term deal. Cap's going to be going up. New TV deals. Yep. All of these things are going to be happening for the NHL that are going to make those deals look even better, as well as obviously him playing well. By the way, Dave, I have a quick answer. I did ask ChatGPT, predict a 7-game series between the 92 Dream Team and the 2024 U.S. Olympics team. ChatGPT says, by a 4-3 margin, the Dream Team wins.
Wow, no way!
That's what AI says.
You know what?
It's not
this
that
should
close,
be a recurring
guys.
Segment. This should be a recurring. What can we ask AI to predict today? I think we should do this more often.
I'm going to say
Does
one
it
thing
have
real
a
quick.
Box score?
I'm going to say this real quick about AI. Don't trust it. I'm telling you right now, don't
You're right.
trust it.
You're right. I'd love if I want to see a simulation. Although every AI weird simulation I've seen, it's a little freaky. Like the eyes are in the wrong place, and it's bizarre. Well, we're ending in a very different spot we started today, gentlemen. Oh, man. Good times. Thanks to our guests today. Thanks to you both as well, and thanks to everybody for listening. Don't forget to check out the podcast if you missed anything today. We'll be back next Sunday. Have a great week, everyone.